All right. So this is James Newberry, and I'm here with Ms. Brenda McCray on Thursday, May 20th, 2021, at her home in Marietta, Georgia, and thank you for meeting with me. Do you agree to this interview?
I do.
Could you tell me your full name?
Brenda Francine McCray.
And what's your birthday?
7/3/56.
Where were you born?
McPherson, Fort McPherson in Atlanta.
And what were your parents' names?
Francis James and Ralph Russo.
Where did they grow up?
My father grew up in Butler, Georgia, and my mother was in Marietta.
And your mother was here in Marietta, so where did she attend school?
She attended the Lemon Street school system, Perkinson, whatever the other names were for it.
And what did your parents do for a living?
My father was in the service. He was a military. He was in the Air Force. And my mother didn't work till we moved back here, and I was in high school.
Do you know what age he was when he joined the military?
I would guess 20, 21.
And so is that why you were at Fort McPherson?
Correct.
So I know that you were born here in Georgia, but at a very young age you moved.
Yeah, we traveled. We moved from spot to spot and ended up back here when I was in the ninth grade.
What were some of those other places that you lived?
We lived in Italy. We lived in Florida, Virginia, Maryland, Washington, D.C., and then back here.
And so were the schools you were attending at that time mostly like military-based schools?
They were all military except for the one in Virginia. It was the state school.
And I assume because they were on military bases, they were integrated schools.
They were, yeah. Everything was integrated. We you know, ate and came home for lunch and went back to school and all that kind of stuff.
In that, like, 9 year or so period when you were living away, how often did you visit Marietta?
We visited every year, except for when we were overseas, of course. When we were in Italy, we didn't. But we visited once, twice a year.
And who were you visiting?
My grandmother, Annalee Porter, my other grandmother, Rosa James, and then all the extended families from there.
But, what did it mean to you to come home? How did you feel about visiting?
I thought it was cool. Coming to Georgia to visit was back then there wasn't any internet, so coming to Georgia, all the kids would say, "What's the latest songs?" Because they didn't hear, you know. They were behind as far as catching up with the latest songs and that kind of, the latest dances. So, you know, we shared that, and whatever the latest was, we brought it south.
Did you drive in?
We drove in.
And when you came down, were there things about town or being in the South that you noticed compared different than where you were living in other places?
No, I think my father just traveled. We traveled in a manner that was accustomed to black people and how they traveled back then. We packed lunches. We didn't eat in restaurants. Stopped and got gas. We stopped in rest places or whatever and ate. We had towels that we had already washed, and then Ziploc bags we washed our hands with, and we didn't, it was pretty much zoom. And my father traveled most of the time. When we traveled at night. We didn't travel in the daytime.
Why
for the
that?
Most time. I think safety.
Did y'all have conversations about it? Did he talk to y'all about that, or was it just something you observed?
It was just something I observed and then kind of picked up on at the end of my childhood. It was one of those things I wasn't told, but at the end, it kind of, as I grew older, it kind of came to me, okay, that's why he did what he did.
And was there a place at which this sort of began, or was it just everywhere for the most part?
It was pretty much everywhere.
So,
I mean, during our travels, I remember we were going through Alabama, and he stopped because he had used the bathroom, and it wasn't pretty when he stopped and got out. It wasn't a very nice situation. Yeah. A couple of white guys got out in their little pickup trucks, and back then, everyone had their little rifle shotgun in the back of the window, and they came over and, you know, asked them where he was from. Are you from New York, boy? And that kind of stuff. And yeah, it was. It wasn't pretty. I remember that like it was yesterday.
I mean, when he got back in the car?
Oh, he didn't get out the car. They got him before he got out the car. And he kept a gun underneath his seat, and he reached down to get it and looked back at me and my brother, and he didn't grab it. I guess he felt like that might not be the best thing to do.
Did y'all talk about it at all after?
No.
Why not?
I don't know. It's just one of those things you just observe and keep going.
Which of your parents was more talkative?
My father didn't talk much at all as far as that kind of stuff goes. And my mother, just depending on the subject and the time, would talk about things, but not to that depth. We didn't talk about, you know, they just told us what to do and what not to do, and we kind of followed their lead.
Back here in Marietta, where did your grandparents live? You mentioned your two grandmothers. Where did they live?
My father's mother lived across the street, and my mother's mother lived two houses down.
Did you get far beyond this area when you would visit?
Yeah, I had an aunt that lives on Washington Avenue.
What was her name?
Annie Cake Sanders. And I have an aunt that lives, I had an aunt that lived down in the projects where they tore that down. That's Lucy James. I had another aunt that lived in Baptist Town. I had an uncle that lived in Smyrna. I have another uncle that lives in Marietta on the other side of the railroad tracks. And I had another uncle that lived in Marietta at the time when I was and then he moved to Ackworth. And I had another uncle that shared, that stayed in my grandmother's house from time to town when he was in town.
Did you go up on the square at all when you were here?
Did I go to the square? I walked past the square on the way to school sometimes. But I had a couple of friends we'd walk with, and they would walk that way. But I didn't patronize the square.
Why is that?
One day I remember some of the classmates were going in to get ice cream, and I observed the people behind the counter waiting on the white people and making the black people wait, and I just said, well, you know, I don't need ice cream that bad, and I just came on. I've never, ever been in the Strand Theater, never. We went to the theaters, the Roxy and the Foxy, down in Atlanta in high school, and I just don't have a desire to go in there. Nothing about it today is wrong. It's just I've never been in there.
Right. So you returned to Marietta in about 1969?
Correct.
And where did you enter school at that time?
I went to Park Street for 1 year and then the high school, Marietta High School, the last 4 years.
Who was your teacher at Park Street? Do you remember?
No.
Was that eighth grade?
Yeah. I don't remember. I know we had somewhat split classes. I know Jenny Carter was there. But that's about it.
What do you mean split classes?
Well, when I came to Georgia, we were doing the high school thing. We changed class. We went to math, English. We had different teachers for different specific things. And here I think we had maybe one teacher that taught it all and another teacher that taught maybe one item or something like that. But
how did the education compare?
Oh, it was not even the same.
How?
I would give Georgia a 2 and the Virginia a 5, 5 being the highest. I mean, it was just, I mean, I left Virginia, we were doing science labs and dissecting animals and all kind of things, and I came to Georgia and we were, felt like I was in elementary school. Plus, in Virginia, I was in junior high. So when I came back to Georgia, I was in elementary again.
So it felt like a real backwards movement.
Oh, it was. It didn't feel like it. It was.
So back here in Marietta, how did you get to Park Street? Was that walking or?
I walked to high school and park and elementary.
Every day.
Every day.
Okay, and you said that I think your mom did go to work at one point.
She went to work somewhere at the end of my high school year, high school term.
Okay, and what was your dad doing when you came back?
He worked for the Department of Labor.
So had he retired from the military?
He retired from the military, yeah.
Okay. Can you tell me about a sort of an average day? You started at Marietta High, and from waking up in the morning, can you take me through your day?
Get up, get dressed, eat, walk to school, and, you know, usually we'd walk with, you know, one or two classmates as a norm. And pick up some more as you go down the road. On the corner of Lemon and Cherokee Street, there was a Texaco gas station. And there was a gentleman in there, I don't know, I can't remember his name, but he sold candy. So some people might stop by there in the morning and get some candy, and some may not. And we just walk to school, go to school, take our classes, and walk back home, and then some people might stop in there and get candy on the way back.
And I know this was 69-70, I mean, right after the demolition of Lemon Street High and the sort of full integration of the schools. What did you know about Lemon Street High School at that point? Did you have any conception that a school had been there and that students had been going there, and then it was suddenly done and demolished?
Yeah, I was fully aware of the integration process. I did go to the school as a, I don't know what they call it, a visitor with one of my cousins one time, and so I got to walk around and that kind of stuff. I do know that they had a very good band at the time, because for some reason or another I remember hearing them play a couple of times. I know they had a good football team back in the day, just from everybody talking about this player or that player or whatever, and how they beat up on Marietta High School and that kind of thing. So I do know that the school was there, and I'm fully aware that things had changed when I got here and everybody was going to an integrated school system.
Was there talk about that? I mean, I'm just trying to imagine. I mean, were people like, yeah, we're going here, it's a good thing that it's happened, or we really miss Lemon Street? I mean, what was the
mood? I think the generation, probably two or three classes above me felt like that, that they were there, but they really didn't want to be there because they didn't feel like they were getting treated as well as they were at Lemon Street. There was a camaraderie at Lemon Street. There was this home feeling. The football players, they weren't happy with the integration because they felt like Prince Johnson wasn't playing them the way they thought they should be played. You know, I remember a couple of incidences where one black gentleman would run the ball down and get to the 10-yard line, and then they'd give it to the, you know, the white players get the touchdown and that kind of stuff. So if you're wanting to get a scholarship, you know, it's not helping you when you don't get to play your full best, play to your full capacity.
I see. What was the ratio of white to black students at Marietta High when you were there?
Oh, if I had to guess, I'd probably say 15-20. Just guessing.
Okay. And how many white students in your classes?
I'd say if there was two or three blacks in there, that was probably the max. Versus however many were in the classroom. I don't remember how many we had in our class.
Did you associate with mostly black classmates or white classmates?
I guess mostly the black ones, because we had to walk together, we had to be together, we had to... Yeah, you know, we were all on the same page. And we all had the same community. You know, if you wanted to go to the rec, we all, I mean, there weren't any whites going to the recreation center, so.
You were going to see each other outside of school mm-hmm. much more so than you would have. And were there students of other ethnicities or backgrounds?
There was very few. Very few. I mean, you know, I would guess that there's probably 1 or 2% of other nationalities. It's not the same today as it was when I was in school, and I will go over there now. It's like, wow, this is amazing.
Yeah. Can you describe the layout of Marietta High as you remember it?
It's changed so much. I know we had an old gym, what they call the old gym. It had a pool at the time. There was an outdoor pool. The gym was like the one in that movie, was it Hustler? Not Hustler, that famous one that everybody, Hoosiers? Yeah, it looked just like that. I remember that. And the school was just, it wasn't as big as it is now, so there's, yeah. But other than that, I don't remember a whole lot more about it.
Do you recall teachers that... Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
meant something to you?
Miss Kohler, she taught math, algebra. I really liked her. And then had Miss, she had a funny name. Why can't it slip me? I'm going to say Miss, I can't remember her name. It'll come to me later. And then we had Miss Love. We had Miss Austin was the principal. We also had, what was the other principal's name? She was good. It was a white lady that was the real principal. Miss Austin was assistant. We had Mr. Hill was there. Mr. Walker was there, taught, what's that called? Not mechanics. Woodwork.
Shop.
Yeah, shop. And we had Miss, we had a home economics teacher. Her name just slipped my mind too. She was a black lady. So we did that.
How many black teachers? I mean, and it, not an exact number, but yeah. I guess a percentage, you know.
I think I had two actual, only one actually, not Eloise, what was her name? That's her sister. Miss Wright, okay, that's her maiden name. She taught home economics. She's the only one that I've had that was black. The rest of them were other colors, all white.
Yeah, one of the things I feel like I've heard or has been repeated through many conversations is that most of the Lemon Street teachers went elsewhere. So there wasn't a lot of carryover except maybe Coach Wilkins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Coach Wilkins was there.
Yeah. What kind of a student were you?
I was probably a B student.
And what made a teacher good in your eyes?
When they taught... And you listened and you could pick up on what they were saying and it made sense and they were able to explain things in a manner to everyone.
What subjects did you do particularly well in?
Math.
That's completely foreign to me. So I know you were a cheerleader, and I want to talk more about that, but were there other extracurricular activities that you were involved in?
We had Future Black Leaders. I was in that. Cheerleading back then was done for football and basketball, so it wasn't two squads like it is now. I think it is now, anyway. I did track. I did do some tennis. But other than that, that was, I think we had a home economics club, but I can't remember if that's true or not. But yeah, I know I did the track and the cheerleading. And that's probably about it, besides the future leaders of America.
Were you encouraged to do that by your parents? Or did you want to?
No. No, my dad wasn't too big of a fan of me being a cheerleader, but my mom was.
How did it come about?
I just went out and tried out. Came home and said, and I didn't even think I'd make it, but came home and said, I made the cheerleading squad. I said, oh, okay.
Now, is it correct that you were the first black cheerleader? Mm-hmm. Were there others who tried out?
Yeah, I'm sure there was others that tried out way before me. I was the first black freshman one, so I made the freshman squad, and then I eventually moved up to the every year. But yeah, Donna Belfour was the cheerleader at the time, Virginia Shaw, and I know that there was others that tried out that just didn't make it.
So there were others already on the team that were older. Or on the squad that were older.
Yeah, Virginia Shaw and Donna Belfour were older than me. I think they made the sophomore cheerleading squad, and I was a freshman.
And how did you try out? Where did that take place, and who did you do it in front of?
We did it at the in the gym, and they had people that judges that came and just judged the cheerleading squad, and they tallied up and gave us the, you know, said this is who it is. And after I graduated for a few years, I did the judging too, so I came back and judged the new ones. And ironically, my daughter-in-law is a cheerleading coach, so it just kept...
Keeps coming down. So you said you're talking about a freshman squad, a sophomore squad, mm-hmm. and I assume junior and senior.
Correct.
So on the freshman squad, when you joined, were the others all white?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And how did you get on with the other cheerleaders?
I got along fine. Yeah, it wasn't a problem.
Yeah. Were there any issues, anything that you ever encountered in that experience?
No, I mean, I pretty much just came to practice and came home. That was pretty much the gist of my cheerleading experience. Now, as we got into the junior senior squad, they would have gatherings. Sometimes they'd go out for breakfast or whatever, you know, have sleepovers or whatever. I didn't do a whole lot of those. I might have gone if it was somebody that I felt like I was comfortable with. I would have gone to their house and had breakfast with them, but I just wasn't. One, it wasn't me. Two, I'm a picky eater. So I mean, I'm like, okay, if they're gonna have omelets and blah blah blah, I think I'll just stay home and eat what I want to eat.
Yes.
So that was, and I know they had gatherings that they did, but that's something they did, and I hung out with my friends.
And you mentioned multiple sports that cheerleaders were cheering. So were you doing it for basketball and football?
Correct.
Okay. And so how much time was taken up with practice?
We practiced 3 or 4 times a week.
All after school?
After school.
How long were you in there? All 4 years?
Correct.
Okay. So let's transition to the homecoming queen. Talk to me about this from the beginning, how this played out for you.
They talked about the homecoming queen and it's time to nominate. And so, one of the teachers made a comment during class that, hey, you should nominate Brenda Russo at the time. And I didn't take nothing about it. I went on about my business. And then... later I found out I was going to be part of the homecoming team, and then the night of the homecoming, me and my cousin was my escort, Johnny James, and we went out on the field and they announced my name, and the crowd, one side of the crowd was like with their mouth open and the other crowd was yay. And I was just like, okay, did they really say my name? Yeah, I guess they did. You know, so I was just in shock that I was chosen.
I mean, how do you know how that process was done and who voted and how the choices were made and things like that?
Every student was voted.
So how did you feel getting that honor from, to be very honest, like a mostly white student body?
I felt good. Then, too, I also felt like, okay, there was a couple of people on there that were really popular that I thought would probably have gotten it. So I think, hindsight being 20/20, I may have gotten it because the votes were split. And I think I had enough white votes to, I must have had enough white votes to get me where I ended up. So, I mean, I don't think that every white person in that school didn't not like me or anything like that. So, it was an honor, to be represented for the school.
And, you've sort of painted yourself as maybe, shyer maybe, or more at home.
I was a homebody, so I mean, I'd speak and say hi and how are you and that kind of stuff, but I wasn't one to really have a whole lot of conversations with people. I mean, nothing, just pretty basic stuff. How was school, or blah, 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 what about this, that, and the other. Just my nature.
I see.
So, yeah.
What was the response of your family to the...
Oh, they were ecstatic.
And then the community.
I think they had more understanding of it than I did. Yeah, I mean, yeah, the community was really ecstatic too. So it was, it was nice.
And can you talk to me a little bit about your goals for the future when you were in high school? What were you planning to do after high school?
Oh, that's a bad question, because I didn't do any of that. I wanted to go to interior designers, and I wanted to go to Bethune-Cookman or any school that I could do interior designing. And from my perspective, they were all out of state. And my father said, oh, no, you're not going out of state. So I thought, okay. So I ended up at West Georgia, which they didn't have anything in home economics, really. So I ended up there. And, I didn't get to do what I wanted to do because I liked to sew and all that kind of stuff. And back then, Ralph Lauren was the item. And my dad was like, you can't make money selling clothes. And I'm like, look at Ralph Lauren. Everybody's got his name on their butt. But then he'd bring me stuff. Can you fix this for me? I'm like, but it's okay. I know part of it was the cost. He didn't want to pay that out-of-state tuition fee. Probably didn't have it either. So that was the thing. And then my brother ended up going to Georgia Tech. So I guess he figured for me, he wasn't going out of town. So I just go to Tech.
What did you study at West Georgia?
I was studying psychology and social.
And what drew you to those, or what prompted that choice?
I kind of just like just figuring out society as a whole, and because I don't talk a lot, but I do a lot of observing. People tell me that, oh God, she sees everything. I do. I just sit back and I try not, I don't say anything. I just absorb. So that was one of the reasons.
How long were you there?
I was there 2.5 years.
And what? Why did you not stay?
I fell in love and got married.
Was it a guy there? Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you want to talk about that at all? Okay. And so when you fell in love and got married, where did you go? Where did you move?
Moved to D.C. and stayed there for about 2 years. No, a year. And then came back to Georgia.
Why D.C.?
That's where he was from. And plus, I had been in D.C., so getting back to the North was one of my things, like, yay, let's go.
And how did, you know, as an adult moving back there, what did you notice about the differences between D.C. and here, Marietta?
Oh, D.C. is much fast paced. Yeah, this is a slow pace.
Did you work?
Mm-hmm. I did.
What did you do?
I worked for Safeway.
And then I know you went from there to, was it First National?
Yeah, I came back here and went to First National.
Okay. And then when did you start at Kroger?
I started in Kroger in 79.
Was that here?
Yeah.
And how long did you work at Kroger?
September 78. It's 42 years.
So you retired in 2020?
Mm-hmm. And that's how this year, 2021.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, so September would have been my anniversary.
Okay. And can you tell me about your career, you know, trajectory there at Kroger? What you were doing?
Well, being at Kroger kind of got me back into that home economics thing, because then I could design, because I started off in the deli, so I could, you know, do the baking and prep cookies and sandwiches and all that kind of stuff. And then as I got out, you know, put displays together, so it was more of that, let's put the puzzle, because I kind of like putting puzzles together, so it was kind of like sewing, where I could put the puzzles together and then I could build displays and make them look good. So it got me back on the home economics side of the field, which I enjoyed.
I see. And just clarify for me how long you've been back in Marietta.
I came back in 79.
And you have been here since then. Okay. How has this city, would you call it your hometown?
Yeah.
How has it changed since you were a child?
Oh, that's a wild question. Well, just this area right here has changed since I've been here, because all of this community that we're sitting in used to be all black. I mean, from one corner to the other corner. And now it's a mix of everything, which is not a bad thing. It's just, it was all, back then it was just, everybody literally knew all of their neighbors, and they knew all about all of their neighbors. And, you know, they knew their mamas, and, you know, you see kids going down the street and you say, does your mama know where you are? I'm going to go tell her, you know, that kind of thing. You know, my kids could walk the streets and everybody knew that that was my child. And, you know, they knew my grandmother was up on the hill, so if they knew if he did something wrong, you know. Everybody just knew. I mean, my aunt would watch. I mean, I could be sitting in here cooking or whatever, and everybody knew my kids were outside, you know. They would keep an eye on, and I'd keep an eye on their kids, and that's gone. I don't have kids anymore either, so, but yeah, that, you know, when I talk to people, I go, well, you know, so-and-so's house, and people look at me like, oh, who are you talking about, you know. I have to talk to somebody that's been around a while, and they go, oh, you know so-and-so, oh, yeah.
So it's, you talk about it not being a bad thing, but, I mean, is there a sense of loss?
It is, but that's just change. Because some people have died off. So, I mean, that's, you know, when they die off, something different has to come about, so.
If newer people, younger people, people who don't have, you know, family lines here move in, what are your connections to the past, other than where you live?
The trees, the house, the grass, the bushes. I mean, that's pretty much my connection. I mean, and to be honest, the generation that's moving in now seems to be my age, and I kind of miss the fact that we don't have kids in the neighborhood. You know, everybody's got grandkids, and so I really kind of miss the fact that we don't have kids in the neighborhood.
Can you tell me about your legacy, what you think your legacy is?
Oh, I have no idea. I just made it one day at a time. Thank you, Jesus.
Well, I appreciate this.
Oh, no problem.
Is there anything else you'd like to share?
No, I think that's it.
All righty. Well, thank you so much, Ms. Brenda McRae.
You're welcome.